Translation. Is Lord Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gives pleasure to the cows, the senses and the brahmanas, who is very affectionate towards his devotees, enjoying the pious assembly at Dwarkapuri, surrounded by friends? Purport. By His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Here in this particular verse, the Lord is described as Bhagavan, Govinda, Brahmanya, and Bhaktavatsala. He is Bhagavan Swayam, or the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, full with all opulences, all power, all knowledge, all beauty, all fame, and all renunciation. No one is equal to or greater than him. He is Govinda because he is the pleasure of the cows and the senses. Those who have purified the senses by the devotional service of the Lord can render unto him real service and thereby derive transcendental pleasure out of such purified senses. Only the impure conditioned living being cannot derive any pleasure from the senses. But being illusioned by false pleasure of the senses, he becomes servant of the senses. Therefore, we need his protection for our own interest. The Lord is a protector of the cows and the Brahminical culture. A society devoid of cow protection and Brahminical culture is not under the direct protection of the Lord. Just as the prisoners in the jails are not under the protection of the king, but under the protection of a severe agent of the king. Without cow protection and cultivation of Brahminical qualities in human society, at least for a section of the members of society, no human civilization can prosper at any length. By Brahminical culture, the development of the dormant qualities of goodness, namely truthfulness, equanimity, sense control, forbearance, simplicity, general knowledge, transcendental knowledge, and firm faith in the Vedic wisdom, one can become a Brahmana and thus see the Lord as he is. And after surpassing the Brahminical perfection, one has to become a devotee of the Lord so that his loving affection in the form of proprietor, master, friend, son, and lover can be transcendentally achieved. The stage of a devotee which attracts the transcendental affection of the Lord does not develop unless one has developed the qualities of a Brahmana as above mentioned. The Lord is inclined to a Brahmana of quality and not of false prestige. Those who are less than a Brahmana by qualification cannot establish any relation with the Lord. Just as fire cannot be kindled from the raw earth unless there is wood, although there is a relation between the wood and the earth. Since the Lord is all perfect in himself, there could not be any question of his welfare. And Maharaj Yudhishthira refrained from asking this question. He simply inquired about his residential place, Dwarkapuri, where pious men assemble. The Lord stays only where pious men assemble and takes pleasure in their glorifying the Supreme Truth. Maharaj Yudhishthira was anxious to know about the pious men and their pious acts in the city of Dwarka. Jai, there's a lot of things in this purport to talk about. Om Ajnanata Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So before I start, I would like to seek the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas assembled in the room and in their own room online, wherever they are, so I can speak some words that may be useful for somebody, or at least for my own self-purification. So senior Vaishnava, Srinivas Prabhu, Gaura Krishna Prabhu, Prayojana Prabhu is outside at the reception, Sutapa Prabhu, everybody else who is also senior, who have missed out. So I was listening to, while doing Pujari service, I was listening to Srila Prabhupada. They played his morning walks. And from my analysis, there's a few words that Prabhupada doesn't like. Certain words. One of the most common words that Prabhupada doesn't like is merge. Whenever Prabhupada heard the word merge, oh, you don't want to be there. There was once one devotee who was saying that he was once with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was getting ready for a talk, and there was somebody who was trying to fix the speakers. Okay, but he couldn't get the speakers to work, so one of them would work, but the other one wouldn't work. So then Prabhupada was like, okay, what's going on? Why isn't this working? Can you get moving? You know, people are waiting, the speakers aren't working. So he was like, and then he goes, okay, Prabhupada. And what he wanted to say was, I'm just going to merge the two channels together. But he only got as far as merge. As soon as Prabhupada heard the word merge, he blasted him for like 15 minutes on like Mayavad philosophy and why merging is not good. He was like, I was just talking about merging the channels together. So Prabhupada didn't like merge. And that's why Prabhupada is known as Nirvishesha. In his pranam mantra also we have Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, fighting impersonalism and atheism. So anything impersonalistic, Prabhupada wasn't into it. Then another word Prabhupada didn't like was, you'd hear it a lot of times in Prabhupada's morning walks when he's arguing, well, not arguing, debating about the scientists and all their inventions. So one of the words was perhaps. So whenever, you know, Prabhupada would have a debate with people and they would say, yeah, perhaps, and Prabhupada would just stop him. What do you mean perhaps? Perhaps means rascal. Prabhupada says, perhaps means he doesn't know what's going on. Why is he a scientist then? If it's perhaps, perhaps, maybe, in the future, all these are phrases that you don't want to use before Srila Prabhupada. So, why am I telling you this? Because Prabhupada preached strongly against these philosophies of Mayavad and impersonalism and Buddhism, voidism. But the world is full of atheists. And all this sort of, in one sense, started when Krishna left the planet. So these two activities of Krishna appearing in this world and Krishna leaving from this world are points in history that are of very significant, turning points in the history of human civilization. Krishna is present everywhere as a super soul. Krishna is present everywhere as his energy. But when Krishna comes to this planet in his personal form, it's a very special moment. And the reason Krishna comes are many, given in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. But the main reason Krishna comes is to enjoy. Okay? And to have good pastimes with his devotees and to attract all the conditioned souls of this world who are merged in impersonalism and voidism and help them become absorbed in Krishna consciousness so they can go and join Krishna in the spiritual world. So that's the main reason he comes. Imagine if Krishna never came. There would be nothing to talk about. Okay, there would be no Bhagavatam, there would be no stories. It'll just be, well, I don't know if the Bhagavad Gita would be there either because Krishna wouldn't be here. So then how would anyone know, just by following rituals and just by following principles, how would they get the taste to go back to Godhead? So that's the main reason Krishna comes. But then Krishna disappears from this planet. That doesn't mean Krishna is not there anymore. It is said Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. But Krishna becomes unmanifest. And the spiritual world also becomes unmanifest to the devotees when Krishna leaves. And nobody wants Krishna to leave, isn't it? It's like Krishna, in so many pastimes you read about Krishna, nobody likes Krishna to leave. So Maharaj Yudhishthir, this is what's happening here. That Maharaj Yudhishthir knows that Krishna is going to leave because Narada Muni has already told him that, that in the future, very soon, Krishna is going to leave. He knows. And he's seeing all these bad omens. So in his mind, he's kind of worked it out. Okay, Arjuna has not come back for a long time. He's seeing all these bad omens. Narada Muni has already told him Krishna is going to leave. So he's worked it out. He knows that Krishna has left. Okay, but still, he doesn't want to believe it because how can you expect Krishna to leave? There's still some hope. Wait, maybe Krishna is still there. And that's why he's still asking questions like, is everybody okay? In Dwarka, everybody's fine. Is Krishna enjoying his pastimes with his devotees? Because he doesn't want Krishna to leave. You see in many, many pastimes, in many different places, that whenever Krishna leaves, even temporarily, there is so much anxiety in the devotees. When Lord Ram leaves to go to the forest for 14 years, the whole village of Ayodhya follows him. And they like camp with him in the forest. They're like, no, if you're going to the forest for 14 years, we'll also come to the forest. Lord Ram saying, no, wait, how are we going to, it won't be a forest anymore. There won't be any point of, exile if the whole kingdom comes with me. But the devotees can't bear staying away from Lord Ram for even a moment. When Lord Chaitanya goes to Jagannath Puri and then he wants to leave to tour South India, okay? And then he leaves and then all devotees just lose consciousness. They just faint because they can't bear separation from Lord Chaitanya even though he's going for a short time. Even many, many pastimes like that, when Krishna is in Vrindavan, and there's, we're not going to talk about the rasa dance, but just as an example, when Krishna leaves the rasa dance, the gopis are very disturbed. Where's Krishna? He's only gone for a few moments. So devotees can't bear separation from the Lord. And what to speak of the Lord, even Prabhupada. Lot of Prabhupada disciples I've spoken to have told me that they actually didn't believe that Prabhupada would ever leave the planet. Because when Prabhupada was here, he was doing everything, he was an expert, everybody felt so protected under Prabhupada's shelter, and Prabhupada was directing the whole movement. Prabhupada was doing everything. He was directing the movement, he was organizing the preaching, he was giving them philosophy, he was training the devotees on how to behave, he was making sure that Krishna consciousness remains to the standard that it's meant to be followed. And Prabhupada was doing everything, and people were so used to like doing everything Prabhupada told them, and their lives were so dedicated to Prabhupada, they never actually thought there would be a time that Prabhupada would ever leave. And when Prabhupada did actually leave, for many, many devotees, it was a shock to like come to terms with the fact that Prabhupada has actually left. And even when the Vaishnava Acharyas leave, Narottam Das Thakur sings. We just had the disappearance day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Narottam Das Thakur sings how he doesn't want to live anymore. He says, I'll enter into the fire and I'll smash my head against a rock. What's that verse? Anale Pashibo. Pashane Kutibo Matha Anale Pashibo. I'll smash my head on the rock and I'll enter into a fire because I can't bear the separation of the Lord and his devotees. So here, this kind of a situation going on. Yudhishthira Maharaj is getting all the symptoms that Krishna has left. He knows, but he's still like, maybe it's okay, maybe he's not left yet. Like, if you watch many movies, especially in Bollywood movies, like everything's like dramatic, like very dramatic. And the wife gets a call from the doctor, please come to the hospital, your husband's in trouble. And she runs, and then she runs to the hospital and she grabs the doctor by the collar. Is my husband okay? Is he okay? I mean, he's not okay. That's why he's called you. But still, she's like, no, I can't believe this, like that. How can anything be wrong? So Yudhishthira Maharaj is also having this predicament. He knows Krishna's left, but he doesn't want to believe it. There's still hope that maybe Krishna's still around. Anyway, so that's going on. Now, some of the things that I want to talk about, mainly, why does Krishna appear? Like I said, Krishna comes here to enjoy and have good pastimes with the devotees. Okay, and our propensity for enjoyment also comes from Krishna. I don't know if you watched a little video that was made many years ago by some devotees who who go out and asking people the questions, you know, this public opinion kind of thing. So the question was, what would you do if you had 24 hours to live? Okay, so people are going, what would you do if you had 24 hours to live? Not the one that Giri Prabhu shows. There's another one. I think it's Ghanshyam Priya in that video. What would you do if you had 24 hours to live? And basically, everybody's just saying things that, let's say, fits into the category of the four regulative principles. That's what they want to do. They want to break the four regulative principles before they die. That's what everyone's going. So you're going around asking, well, and that's what everyone's saying, you know, drinking, gambling, and all the other things. And then there's this one Indian guy. He asks, like, what would you do if you had 24 hours to live? And he goes, enjoy the life. And then he asks him, like, yeah, but how would you enjoy? What would you do? He goes, eat, enjoy the life. It's very funny because in different cultures, the definition of enjoyment is very different in different culture. Very different. Like in the West, if you talk about enjoyment, it means, you know, drugs, clubbing, alcohol, you know, other things, illicit sex, all those things. That's the West. If you go to India and if you ask people, how do you enjoy? It's like, I want to eat, you know. I want to have a good meal. Cook me something nice and I'm happy, you know. None of these things. And I can testify to that because I grew up in India. And drugs, alcohol, all these things was never even in my mind. I didn't even like think about these things. I was just happy having, you know, going to friends, having different meals, you know, different food. That was it. You know, that's fun. Now, why am I telling you that? I'm telling you that because everybody likes to enjoy. This propensity of enjoyment comes from Krishna. The only problem is that we want enjoyment, but not Krishna. That's a real problem. We want enjoyment without Krishna. So, somehow, I'm telling you this because in this purport, Prabhupada speaks about how one can be really happy. And all these methods of enjoyment, whether it's eating or whether it's, you know, drinking or alcohol or whatever, whether it's bona fide forms of enjoyment or whether it's unbona fide forms of enjoyment. Either way, enjoyment is enjoyment of the senses. And in the purport, Prabhupada talks about how we can't enjoy with the senses unless our senses are pure. Okay? You cannot actually we actually don't even know how to gratify our senses. Okay? In the material world, the highest thing you can have is to be a master. Okay? If you're the king, if you got nobody to report to, that's the best position you can be in. And that's what's being propagated. Everyone's trying to get to the top. Okay? Whereas in the spiritual world, everyone's trying to go to the bottom. Okay? Krishna is called Brahmanya, like it's mentioned here, because Krishna is one who pleases the devotees of the Brahmanas. Not even the Brahmanas, the devotees of the Brahmanas. People who respect the Brahmanas, serve the Brahmanas. Those are the devotees that Krishna likes. So the further down you go, the better it is. But in the material world, the opposite is propagated. That's why nobody is enjoying, because they don't know how to enjoy. People don't even know how to enjoy sensually. If you want to enjoy your senses, here's the formula that Prabhupada is giving. You have to try to be a servant. Okay? It's the most important thing. Now, sometimes people ask this question. I don't know, you may have a little question in your mind as well. It's like, okay, when I go to the spiritual world, what's my rasa? Okay? I love milk and paneer. I must be a cowherd boy in the spiritual world. Okay? Or, you know, I want to be a gopi. I must be a gopi because I don't want to settle for anything less than a gopi because the gopis are the highest. So I don't want to be like an ordinary servant or a blade of grass. I want to be a gopi. We often speculate, Prabhu, what is my rasa? And in trying to figure out what our rasa is, there's been so many upper sampradayas in Lord Chaitanya's movement. And many, many upper sampradayas, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about, because they're trying to figure out what my rasa is, what my relationship in the spiritual world is. Well, Prabhupada says, well, I'll tell you what your rasa is. Your rasa is to be a servant. Well, first, try to be a servant, because that is the predominant quality in all the different rasas. Whichever rasa you take, doesn't matter. Everybody is a servant of the Lord, and that is their mood. Okay? If you don't know your rasa, it's okay. It'll come in time. Don't worry about it. But first try to be a good servant. That's the most important thing. If you look at examples of devotees in any book, okay, when the gopis are separated from Krishna in the rasa dance, they're saying, "Where is Krishna? Please come and accept me. We're just like your maidservants. What are we going to do without you? We're your maidservants." That's what the gopis are saying. You know, when Draupadi meets the queens of Krishna, when Krishna goes to Kurukshetra, he's been living in Dwarka for a long time, and then he goes to Kurukshetra, and in Kurukshetra all the Yadus are there, and then also all the Kauravas are there, and then people from Vrindavan, everybody is there. And Draupadi has heard so many things about Krishna and his queens, his 16,000 queens, and finally she gets to meet Krishna's queens, and she's asking them, "Tell us how you met the Lord and what's your relationship?" And you read that chapter, every single queen is saying, "This is the story, da 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 da. This is how I met Krishna, and now I'm engaged in Krishna's service." You know, Kalindi, Yamuna Devi says, "I was engaged in severe austerities to get Krishna as the husband. Krishna came, accepted me as his wife, took me to his palace, and now I'm engaged as a sweeper in his palace." That's what Kalindi says. All queens, everybody is saying, "I'm engaged as a servant." In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you read in the initial chapters, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that all devotees are engaged as Krishna's servants. Even Balaram, even though he's his older brother, he's only serving Krishna as an older brother. He's making all these different arrangements. When Krishna would go to the forest, you know, sometimes Balaram would massage his feet when Krishna would play his flute. Sometimes Krishna would massage his feet. And even Nanda and Yashoda, if you look at parents, what are parents doing? Parents are, their first job in family life is to serve their children. They're serving their children, that's what they're doing. The child's walking around the house just like, you know, doing stuff all over the place, and then the kids and the parents are cleaning, and they're serving the children. And Nandaya and Yashoda also, even though they're Krishna's parents, they're just serving. So if you want to know your rasa, if you want to be happy, the first thing you need to learn is how to be a servant. Unless you work that bit out, nothing else is going to work. Okay? And why does it work? Because Krishna is the energetic, and Krishna and everybody else is Krishna's energy. So there's the energy always serves the energetic. So Krishna, because he's a source of energy, he gets pleasure from being served, and because we're all the energy of Krishna, we get pleasure from serving Krishna. That's just the constitutional position. That's the way it works. Okay? There is masculine and there is feminine. Masculine energy gets pleasure from being served. Feminine energy gets pleasure from offering service. And we're all Krishna's feminine energy. We're not talking about men and women. Don't come to me with questions like, "No, why are women meant to serve the men?" We're not talking about that. We're talking about the principle of male and female. Krishna is male. Everybody else is female. If you're female, whether you're in a male body or female body, it doesn't matter. If you're female, you get pleasure by service, offering service. That's the way it works, full stop. Okay? If you want to be happy, you have to serve. Even in normal day-to-day life, you'll see that if you get more pleasure from doing service to somebody than somebody serving you all the time. Okay? You actually get annoyed after a while if someone's always coming to you saying, "Prabhu, can I please serve you? Can I please massage your lotus feet?" You're just like, "Okay, leave me alone." You know, just. Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gauranithai Ki. So offering service and serving Vaishnavas, serving the Lord, is the primary thing. If you want to be happy, you have to serve. Okay, that's the position you have to accept. Because that's the way everything is. There's a verse which says, "Yatha taror mula nishechanena tripyante tat kandar bhujopashaka pranopahara chayathendriyanam tathaiva sarvarhanam achyutejya." Just like a tree. When the root is watered, all the different parts of the tree are watered automatically, and the tree is satisfied. If you try to water the individual parts of the tree, it'll never get any nourishment. If the stomach is fed, all the different parts of the body are fed. If you serve, if you become a servant, if Krishna is pleased, everybody is pleased. But if you individually try to please your senses by becoming like Krishna, by becoming a master, it doesn't work. It just won't work. It's because that's not how you're designed. Okay? Now, what about enjoyment of the senses? Because people say, you know, sense enjoyment, Prabhu, we have senses. I'm sure some regulated enjoyment is okay. Everything is to be done in regulation. Yes, that is true. But Prabhupada says that the secret of enjoyment is if your senses are purified, then you'll be able to enjoy. And Prabhupada says no one can be happy by trying to be, no one can be happy by trying to please the impure senses. If your senses are impure and you try to enjoy your senses, you'll just become a servant of the senses. But if your senses are purified by serving Krishna, then you'll become a master of the senses. Okay? So your senses have to be purified first, and only then you'll be able to enjoy your senses. As an example, say if you take rice, okay? If you take rice and you don't clean the rice, and there's some, you know, some stones in there, there's some sand in there in the rice, and you don't clean it, and you use the best quality milk, you use the best quality sugar, you make all these spices and you add the best, you make the best sweet rice with camphor, okay, just the right amount of camphor, and you make really good sweet rice, and you eat it, you won't be able to enjoy it. Why? Because you didn't clean the rice in the first place. It was impure. There were grains there. You couldn't enjoy. Doesn't matter what best quality stuff you do, you won't be able to enjoy. But if you clean the rice, do the same process, you'll enjoy. Just like that. If your senses are impure, you may try to make the best arrangement to enjoy your senses. You get the perfect house, perfect family, perfect measures, comfort, everything for your sense enjoyment. You won't be able to enjoy because your senses are impure. Eventually, you will get frustrated, you'll get angry, you'll get annoyed, and nothing will really work. But if you purify your senses by serving the Lord, you'll be satisfied straight away without making any elaborate arrangements, because Krishna will make the arrangements for you exactly what you need. Okay? Right amount of camphor. That's what you need. Now, when this understanding of how to enjoy is applied to whole society, that is called culture. Okay? So a culture is basically giving you a definition of how to live in a certain way so as to purify your senses and to be happy, and everybody is happy. In materialistic culture, the system is that you try to be the master, and that's what everybody's trying to do. That's why there's unrest everywhere, because everyone's trying to be the king. Whereas in spiritual culture, everyone's trying to be the servant, and that is Brahminical culture. And Prabhupada talks about Brahminical culture in this verse, okay, in the purport. And he talks about a civilization that protects cows and brahmanas. It's a culture that is personally protected by Krishna. Cows and brahmanas are very, very important. Cow is like our mother, okay, and cows need to be protected. I used to give tours before when I had spare time, and I would always take people to see the Goshala. You'll be surprised by the amount of people, especially kids, the amount of kids that have no idea where milk comes from. If you ask them where does milk come from, most kids will say Tesco's. Okay, they have no idea that the milk they're drinking comes from an animal, that's a cow. And they have no idea that the milk that they're drinking and the animal that's on the plate is the same. They have no idea of the relation. So when they see the cows, they're astonished. And even the parents, when they see the cows, they're like, wow, this is amazing. Because so many people, unless you live in the countryside, you won't believe it. So many people have never actually seen a cow, like up close. They may have seen like driving on a motorway up in the fields or something. But people actually have never seen a cow. So many people have told me that. It sounds strange. In India, there's cows wandering everywhere on the street. But here, so many people haven't actually seen a cow. And so when they see the cow, they're like, wow, this is amazing. Is this what I'm eating? And I try to explain to them how a cow is like a mother in different ways. a cow is actually even more like a mother than your own mother. Did you know that? And subconsciously, we do accept this fact as well. Let me give you an example. A mother would give you milk for how long? How long would you breastfeed? 2 years, okay? In Vedic culture, you breastfeed for 5 or 6 years, okay? In previous times, sometimes even up to the age of 7 or 8. You'll be eating other things as well. You'll be having milk as well. But whatever it is, okay? But a cow gives you milk for the rest of your life, okay? A mother would give you milk for a few months, but a cow gives you milk for the rest of your life. Think about another point. Say you're a mother, okay? You're breastfeeding your kid, okay? You're not going to pass your kid down to your neighbor and say, okay, I'm done. Can you like feed my kid some milk? Okay, and then, you know, when you're done, pass it on to the other ladies down the street and let them breastfeed my kid as well. You wouldn't do that, would you? But naturally, you would give the kid cow's milk. There's this natural trust that comes. We subconsciously do understand that a cow is like our mother. So people are going, yeah, that's a good point. And I tell them, but when your mother's old, you don't put your mother in a sandwich, do you? It's like, so. But when the cow's old, you put the cow in a sandwich. It's a bit like, you know, like, hey, I'm having a party at my house. What is it? Oh, it's my mom's 70th birthday. Can you come? Yeah, sure, I'll come. What do you have for dinner? Oh, I got sandwiches. Oh, what sandwiches have you got? I got mom's sandwiches. Oh, you mean your mom made them? No, my mom's in the sandwich. Please come. That's how we're celebrating her 70th birthday, by killing my mom and sticking her in a sandwich. So it sounds ridiculous. But that's what we're actually doing. We're taking all the benefits from a cow, treating her like a mother, subconsciously, and then we're killing the cow and putting her in a sandwich. And Prabhupada says that when you kill cows, okay, that's not good. And here Prabhupada is explaining how one who protects cows, Krishna personally protects them. One who serves the brahmanas, looks after the brahmanas, Krishna looks after them. And a culture that protects brahmanas and protects cows, that culture is personally protected by Krishna. But in the West, we don't have that. Even in India, we don't have that, actually. For many, many years, I don't know what's the situation now, but India was the largest exporter of beef in the world. And I don't know if it's still the case. But you would think that in a culture where Vedic culture was so prominent, a place like that would, you know, export beef. But anyway, the point is Brahminical culture. And there is once this culture is present, implemented, this culture actually helps you develop the qualities that you need in Krishna consciousness. There is a very strong interdependence between culture and qualities. Sometimes we have this habit that we say, Prabhu, you know, Krishna consciousness is spiritual, it's all about what's happening inside. You know, don't worry about the rituals, it's all external. You don't need to worry about what you wear, what you do. As long as inside you're serving, you're connected with Krishna, it's fine. Well, unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. Because if you get rid of all the aspects of culture, you'll have nothing to support you in your Krishna consciousness. Okay? Imagine we said, okay, you know, from tomorrow onwards, none of the bhaktas, no devotees have to wear dhotis, you can wear whatever you want. The brahmacharinis, you can wear whatever you want. Okay, and then everyone's turning up in like jeans, t-shirts. And then you turn up in the temple room and we say, okay, there's no need for deities. You know, that's just part of culture. It's all about chanting the holy name. The holy name is the process. We don't need any of that. And then everyone's sitting in their jeans and t-shirts and chanting Hare Krishna with no deities in the temple room. How would that work? Okay? If you cut down aspects of culture, it will affect your Krishna consciousness, because there is a reason Krishna has established this culture. And that culture supports your Krishna consciousness. If you cut down things, even though they are rituals, then eventually you're cutting down all your support structure that's going to hold you up in Krishna consciousness. Okay, maybe you don't need it. Maybe it is true. Maybe there are Babaji's somewhere, there are devotees somewhere who are just happy, just chanting the holy name. Okay, great. Krishna consciousness is transcendental. The question is, are you transcendental? If you're not, then you need culture. Then you need Brahminical culture. Then you need to follow the rules that are there, and you need to follow the rituals. Whether, doesn't matter how useless they seem to you, if you stop doing them, somebody else stops doing them, everybody stops doing them, very soon they won't exist, and there won't be a support framework for you to hold you up in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is explaining how culture, especially Brahminical culture, is very, very important. And when you have Brahminical culture, you'll develop the qualities. And Prabhupada especially talks about how only when you develop, what's the exact statement? So Prabhupada writes, those who are less than Brahmana by qualities cannot establish any relation with the Lord. Because Krishna is looking for qualities. Unless you develop the qualities, Krishna is not interested in you. Okay, Krishna is equal to everybody because, you know, Krishna is neutral, so he's equal. But if you're looking for a relationship with the Lord, then that's different. Unless you have the qualities, Krishna's like, okay, you're a good guy, but anyway, carry on. You carry on with your life. I'm going to carry on with my life. I have my devotees. I'm very happy with them. And you seem to be happy with your sense enjoyment, so you carry on. Unless we develop the qualities, we can't establish a relationship with the Lord. But then Prabhupada also writes that once you develop the qualities, that's not the goal. The goal is not to develop Brahminical qualities. But Prabhupada writes, once you develop these qualities, then you'll be able to understand your rasa. So number one, first try to become a servant. Okay, even if you want to enjoy your senses, try to become a servant. Because when your senses are purified, then you'll be able to enjoy properly. When you're a servant, then you'll be able to enjoy. If you want to have fun, be a servant, not be a master. Okay, number two, protect culture. Because Brahminical culture, in whatever form there is, we should try and uphold it, because that will help you develop all these qualities, that will sustain your Krishna consciousness, and the qualities that you develop are what you will need, because without developing these qualities, you can't have a relationship with the Lord. And number three is, once you have the qualities, then you can go further and establish your relationship with the Lord. Krishna, Prabhupada explains different names of Krishna in this verse. Govinda, Brahmanya, and Bhakta Vatsala. Okay? You know what a Vatsa means? Vatsa means a calf. And the cow is very affectionate to her calf. Okay? So Krishna is affectionate to his devotees, his Bhakta Vatsala, just like a mother cow is affectionate to her calf. Like that. So you have to, but for Krishna to be affectionate to you, you have to have the qualification, you have to have the qualities that you have to develop. Hare Krishna, so please be a servant and please be happy. Any questions? We got 1 minute. Cyrus Prabhu.
So Prabhu, thank you for your class.
Yeah, don't ask me difficult questions.
Very nice. I don't have any difficult questions. I'm only a simple... Well,
thanks.
I'm even trying to be a devotee. I'm not even one yet.
Sure.
So Prabhupada talks about protection of brahmanas and the cows.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that protection, not just for cows, but for all the vulnerable, yeah, innocent animals. And something happened in America recently, which I find disturbing, actually. It's along these lines. So during the lockdown, they had this pig farms. And what happened is that they couldn't sell the pigs. So they put them into a place and they steamed them, because they can't continue to feed them if they can't sell them. So they steamed the pigs in this place. And they were screaming. That's what I heard from a source. And the pigs were screaming. And then after a while, they would walk through, and the pigs that survived the steaming thing session, they would just shoot them like that. And you know what? It's that image, that thing report, it stays with me for quite some time. It's sort of in my brain there. It's quite disturbing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it would be more disturbing if there were cows. You know what I mean? So, I know Prabhupada, he talks about protection for cows. And I can see the validity in that statement, because cows, I understand, are so precious. But what about the other living entities who are suffering enormously at the hands of, this cruel civilization?
Yeah. Very good point, Cyrus Prabhu. Thank you. Thank you for the question and the comments. Krishna says a devotee is Pandita Samadarshina. He sees everybody equally. And Prabhupada also explains in many, many places that we think that humans are just citizens, but the animals are not. Isn't it? It's not that anybody who's born in your kingdom is a citizen. When Maharaj Parikshit was there, when a bull was being attacked, he stopped him. When any animal in a kingdom should be protected because they're all citizens of that society. But nowadays we think humans are citizens, everybody else we can kill. These cows, they're British. They're British citizens. They're born here. You know, they have a tag as well. They're also citizens, but they don't get the rights. So all animals are part of society and they should all be protected. So you are right. But the reason emphasis is given on cows is that cows are specially meant to be protected, because if you kill the mother of society, you really don't have any hope. Okay? So sometimes there is a provision made in the Vedas that for people who are in the mode of ignorance, if they want to eat animals, okay, then there is a provision made that under certain circumstances you can kill the lesser animals, and Prabhupada talks about it. Okay? And this is not within Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudras. This is below. So people who don't follow that culture, mlechas. So they also would eat lower animals, but even they wouldn't eat cows. Nobody would eat a cow. Even the people who are not in Vedic culture, who don't fit into the varnashram, even they wouldn't eat cows. Okay? So, because cow is like a mother and should be protected at all times. So, generally, you know, when somebody comes to Krishna consciousness and they're trying to give up meat, the first thing we tell them is that, okay, because they're still attached to eating meat sometimes, so we tell them, okay, first stop cow, okay? Then stop the other animals, then go down to the fish, then go down to the eggs, then go, if they're attached to something. But the cow killing has to stop first, and then everything else should also be stopped. Definitely everything, but even more so the cows, because cow's like a mother. Well, other animals eaten also is not good, because there's never a provision in Vedic culture for mass killing of animals in a slaughterhouse. There's no such thing as a slaughterhouse, okay? It would be at a certain yajna, at a certain ceremony, or at a certain ritual where people of the lower, sort of outside the four varnas, would be allowed to kill some animal and eat it occasionally under certain very regulated conditions. There was never ever any provision for mass killing of animals like that happens now. So that's not good at all, whether it's cows or not. But at least the cow should be stopped first. That's the point. Ian Prabhu, I think it's already 8:30, so if people want to go, they can. But if you want to ask a question, you can.
Hi Krishna, thank you so much for your class. Very, very direct and very nice.
You just came now.
No, I was listening. I was doing cleaning. So I was listening. You were talking about culture and how, you know, there's different, you know, the different cultures. And, you know, I wanted to ask you just in regards to preaching, because we see some people, they appreciate that, you know, the teachings of Krishna consciousness. And but the display culture of how it is in this kind of a setting is a little bit not as attractive to them. So probably the advice how we can kind of appeal to them, you know, collectively, both the physical aspects of the culture and, you know, the principles as well.
Well, the thing is, I personally don't think that there is any need to tell people to stop accepting culture or any need to try and hide anything from them, because people will kind of take up Krishna consciousness to whatever level they feel comfortable with anyway. Like, if somebody doesn't want to wear a dhoti, for example, to come to a temple, you don't have to force them. And you don't have to say no either. Eventually, in time, if they feel inclined to it, they'll naturally take it up. Like the first time you went to a temple, you weren't wearing a dhoti. Okay, we're just talking about dress for now. I'm just giving you an example. Culture is a lot more than dress. But we just use the dress as an example. So you may not want to start wearing a dhoti right away, and that's fine. But whenever you feel comfortable, you will. But I don't think there is a need to tell people that don't do it. Because people won't do it anyway if they don't want. There's no need to verbalize it and tell people like that. So if you want to make it comfortable, fine. There was they did a survey about the dress once, the devotees, and anyway, I don't want to mention names. There were certain sannyasis. So they tried out giving a talk, going out to preach in like a plain dress, and it worked. And then on one occasion, they brought in a Swami, who is a very respectable personality. They said, we're going to have the Swami coming in. And then on one occasion, they went in like normal dress. And then another occasion, they went in like full sannyasi gear. And I think people tend to appreciate the sannyasi gear more, because when they see somebody who's fixed in the culture, who's speaking to them, it seems like they're speaking from a position of authority. Okay? If I'm speaking like this, okay, people may not be able to relate to me, but I'm something different, so I know what I'm talking about. People get that understanding. If I'm just dressed like you and I'm telling you about some Krishna consciousness, what's the difference between you and me? People will say, well, you're just like me. You got your philosophy, I got my philosophy. But if you speak like this, so the culture does sort of stand as an authority as well to some extent. So there's plus and minus to both. You just have to judge based on the situation. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.